This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Good afternoon. In The Art of Eating, M.F.K. Fisher said, our basic needs, food security and love, are so entwined that you can't think of one without the others. Journalist, filmmaker, and food writer Miriam Weinstein agrees. She quotes Fisher at the outset of her book, The Surprising Power of Family Meals. This afternoon, we're going to talk about that power. We'll look at the benefits of families coming together and coming together to share a meal. And given the logistical challenges of getting the family together and getting dinner on the table, we'll also talk about how to make family meals happen. Miriam Weinstein is our guest this afternoon. She's visiting the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program here at the University of Illinois. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. For 10 years, she made documentary films covering topics including childbirth, breastfeeding, daycare, marriage, and divorce. As a journalist, she has written for the Boston Globe, Boston Magazine, and the Toronto Globe and Mail, as well as for online publications including Jewish Family and Life. In addition to The Surprising Power of Meals, our guest, Miriam Weinstein, is the author of the award-winning Yiddish, A Nation of Words, and the editor of Prophets and Dreamers, a selection of great Yiddish literature. Listeners, do join us with your questions and comments this afternoon. We'd also like to know what supper time is like for you and your family. Has it changed over time? Do you make a special effort to gather together for meals? Is it a challenge? Again, the phone number is 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Miriam, thank you so much for joining us this
afternoon. Well, it's great to be here.
You know, we see research now from all kinds of sources and places that tell us regular family meals are important. What do family meals provide a family? What is the power of the family meal?
Well, they provide stability. They provide, for many families, they provide an occasion to actually get together and see each other face to face. For many families these days, that's the only time when they are all together and they're all concentrating on each other. That's the most direct thing. They provide nourishment. They provide lots of opportunities for language development, better nutrition, a way to connect to our heritage, our religious, our national, our ethnic traditions, and they provide a tremendous sense of security and access to each other as a family.
Yeah. They help glue us together.
They do. They do.
Yeah. Do you see with the attention that this topic is receiving a desire and an effort on the part of people to return to a time together at table?
I think we've gone very far in one direction, and that's a direction of individual schedules, of extreme individual ambition. And I don't know that people are looking to return to something, because that's neither possible nor desirable, but they're looking for a way to go on to the next step and to get a better balance in their lives.
Yeah, I think you put it in the book, The Surprising Power of Family Meals. You're not arguing for a return to a Neverland,
right,
of meatloaf and frilly aprons.
Right. It's not going to happen, and we shouldn't yeah, expect it to happen or want it to happen.
I don't think it ever happened except on TV.
Right. That's true. It never, the good old days were never that good.
Yeah. Well, in addition to this research that we see that says regular family meals are important and good for us, we also read in here that we're eating more of our meals outside the home and on the run. And you report that you're no longer surprised when someone tells you they don't have a kitchen or a dining room table.
Yes, the first time I heard that, I have to admit, I was in total shock. My mouth was just hanging open. These were middle-class people who not only did they not have a dining room table, did not have any place where the family could actually sit down and share a meal and face each other. And now I just keep going. we've sort of passed a point at which it's expected that families will eat together. It's not surprising anymore.
Yeah. Are families across the demographic spectrum struggling with this?
Yes, yes. This happens at all income levels and for different reasons, but it's happening at all income levels.
How did we get here? And is it all bad?
We got here for a variety of reasons. One was that women began working outside of the home in large numbers. Another reason is the availability of food. Cheap food is all around us. It's very easy to buy something and eat it. It's every place. Another reason is the outsourcing of parenthood and the professionalization of parenthood. We have come to think that parenting is such a difficult job that it requires the use of experts. So we tend to farm our children out. They need to go to soccer practice where they can be coached by the soccer professional. They need to have the lessons. We need to have our houses taken care of by professionals. So there's just less time when we're just sort of hanging around the house as a family.
And for people who are working class or who are really struggling to make ends meet, they might be out of the house because
they're working.
They're working, because they're working, working more than one job.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. On the flip side, though, on this idea of, I think that some people might challenge you on this idea of farming things out. You know, we've got to get things done. We've got to hold the whole family together.
Sure.
And aren't we preparing our children for what's coming next for them, you know, high school, college, workplace, so on and so forth?
Well, one change that's happened is that a lot of parents are not so confident in their parenting abilities as perhaps they were in the past. There's this sort of anxiety about college, which filters down to all levels of society and all ages. Parents are reluctant to take their kids off of that treadmill, or to reduce the speed of that treadmill. And instead of saying, "Well, goodness, you're learning something just by being part of a family." Because, in fact, you know, we spend a lot of our parenting time driving kids to practice, driving kids to lessons, making sure that they get all of these enrichment opportunities, which makes us feel when the kids grow up, it's unlikely that they're going to be professional athletes or professional musicians. But what is highly likely is that they will grow up to be members of families. Mm. And we are not investing a lot of time or energy in building our families.
All this scheduling, too, it seems to me that maybe we're not allowing children to find their own gifts.
That is a whole other subject, which is huge. It's just huge. Our schedules have become tighter and tighter and tighter, and kids are suffering from that. When I've talked to admissions officers at colleges, they see this, and they really see this as a problem, that kids are showing up in college having spent their whole school careers being pressured to just keep adding things to the resume, and they arrive in college sometimes and just crash.
Yeah. Well, life is not a checklist.
No.
Shouldn't be anyway. So what has led to all this anxiety on the part of parents in terms of raising kids?
There's certainly a sense of scarcity, that jobs are not as plentiful, that opportunities are not as plentiful. And parents feel an awful lot of peer pressure, I think. It's very hard to be the first one to say, well, I'm going to tell my kids, you know, just do one sport and just take one lesson and be home for dinner.
Yeah, a period of withdrawal, I would imagine. a period of adjustment. What are we doing?
Right.
And that's interesting, too. I think that all of us, if we're not busy doing something, we feel at a loss.
Yes, yes. There certainly has been a ramping up of the pace of life. Yes.
So you can't just walk down the street. You've got to be doing something. You've got to be listening to a public radio broadcast that you missed, and you're downloading it, and you're walking around with that, you know, with the iPod and the podcast, or you're making telephone calls. You know, there's
preferably you're doing several things at once.
Yeah, although that can be quite dangerous. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Miriam Weinstein. We're talking with her about a book that she has written, The Surprising Power of Family Meals, How Eating Together Makes Us Smarter, Stronger, Healthier, and Happier. My name is Celeste Quinn, listeners. I invite you to join us this afternoon. We look forward to hearing from you. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. I understand you recently became a grandmother.
I did. It was just wonderful. I have a little granddaughter. She's almost a year old now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I have to say that she is eating supper with her parents these days.
Very good.
They pull up the high chair to the table, and they eat supper with her.
Now, when you were raising your children, your child or children, I don't know, I suspect you were working.
I was working, but luckily I was able to be home for supper most of the time. Sometimes I was working as a reporter, and sometimes I had to cover evening meetings, but I was mostly able to be home. I have to say that one of the reasons that I wrote this book was that I never realized how much the world had changed. When I was providing supper for my family, I never even realized there was an option. It never occurred to me that you could not eat supper. I mean, I guess I'm one of those people who likes to eat three meals a day, and I never even realized you could do something else.
Yeah. So what was supper time like when you were a working mom?
Well, I have to say, lots of chopped meat. my son was a very big, you know, and any form of chopped meat was good. Hamburgers, meatloaf,
Sloppy Joes, spaghetti.
Yes. Yeah. And we had many, many of those options. I encouraged my kids to hang around the kitchen. My daughter liked to cook. My son had no interest in cooking, but hanging around the kitchen was where I was, so it was a good place to be.
Yeah, that's great. So he, in this kept up through high school, did it? That the kids would be with you in the kitchen talking?
Because sometimes, that's a big complaint, sure, you know. Sure. It, you know, certainly it varies. That sort of thing varies by age. But when you're available, then the kids know where to find you. And if they know, one of the real benefits of supper is that it's a reliable opportunity for families to get together. If kids know that supper is going to happen every day, they know that they are going to see you and they're going to see their siblings on a regular basis. And parents know that they're going to see their kids on a regular basis. That is so important. It's so helpful in heading off big problems, because you can just see what's going on with your kids and get a handle on what's going on in their lives day to day. They may not talk to you all the time about the deep things that are happening, but at least you have the opportunity.
I suspect part of this is just the routineness of it.
Routine seems to be extremely important to human beings on a very deep level. There's fascinating research that shows that kids who have asthma, for instance, if those kids are in families that have supper every day, those kids have fewer days of hospitalization, they miss fewer days of school, they have fewer emergency room visits. That's the kind of thing that we must feel so deeply that it's just incredibly important, and we give it up at our peril.
So there's a health link.
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. Because I can understand the link between eating on the run and not sitting down to a meal, of a balanced meal in terms of our problem with weight.
Mm-hmm. But, absolutely.
And nutrition problems. But in terms of health, in terms of keeping kids with asthma.
Yes, that sort of thing is really surprising, but once you think about it, makes a lot of sense. It's the consistency and it's the ritual. As human beings, we respond to that very deeply.
Mm. Let's take a telephone call now. Our guest this afternoon, Miriam Weinstein, author of The Surprising Power of Family Meals, How Eating Together Makes Us Smarter, Stronger, Healthier, and Happier. We have a listener joining us now from Urbana, Line 1. Hi.
Hi, just a quick comment. I've got to go, but neither of these is a panacea. But when we were raising our five kids, our basic approach was to have no snack food in the house, and also we didn't have television, and that helps. You have a comment, if you want to, I'll hang up.
Okay.
Well, congratulations to you. One of the real benefits of having regular meals is that it helps regularize your food intake throughout the day. If you know that you're expected to show up for a meal at a specific time, you're less likely to snack in the hours before that. So it's really good for your nutrition way beyond that mealtime. Also, in terms of television, I cannot say strongly enough, turn off the TV. There are if you are watching the TV while you're eating, you are all facing the TV, you are interacting with pretend characters who are on the TV, you're giving up your major opportunity to see your family, to interact with your family, to talk with your family.
Yeah. We had the TV on occasionally when I was growing up at mealtime because it was a way of keeping the peace. So talk with us about that.
Okay.
How do you make
negotiate that? I don't want to say that you have to do anything because families don't need one more pressure. Families are under more than enough pressure and they're getting little support. So anything that I say, please feel free to modify it for your family. But in general, you know, mealtimes, sharing mealtimes are important, but also keeping them as conflict-free as you can, as pleasurable as you can, because you want it to be about pleasure. Eating is an inherently pleasurable experience, and you want to keep things... you want to make it the best version of your family that you can. It's not a time to lecture kids. It's not a time to let your temper out. If you're having problems with your kids or your spouse, this is not the time. This is the time to enjoy being together and building a sense of enjoying each other.
If that's a problem, though, if that's something that's going on, how do you approach that problem?
Well, you could say, let's just shelve it for this hour or this half hour or this 15 minutes or whatever it is. Let mealtime be a safe time. Let it be a timeout. You can be very specific about it. We're not going to talk about that now. We're not going to go into that now. We're just going to let that slide for right now, period.
Yeah. My father-in-law gives the timeout signal like a football referee. time. So this is the Afternoon Magazine. My name's Celeste Quinn. Miriam Weinstein, our guest this afternoon. Well, at table, hopefully there's some conversation going on, and that's so much a part of it. That should be part of the joy of it. But what to talk about?
What to talk about? That's as varied as which people there are. Now, the most obvious thing that people talk about is what they did during the day. And that turns out to be really important for language development. There was a really interesting study at Harvard University of preschoolers, and people doing the study found, much to their surprise, that the kinds of conversations that we have around the meal table are very important in building vocabulary. And building vocabulary is really important in learning how to read, and learning how to read is very important in success throughout school. So just these learning to tell a story is a really important skill. And these are very tiny stories we're talking about. We're talking about my doll took a nap today. I had a cookie and I liked the cookie. My best friend and I dug a large hole. These are very little stories. And as grown-ups, we model stories. We model telling these kinds of things. You can tell what you did today, and your story might be a little longer than a toddler's, but you you model what's the appropriate thing to talk about.
How do researchers study family meals?
Lots of times they will ask families to tape record them. Sometimes they will videotape them. And sometimes just ask families what they do.
And then how is that deciphered?
For instance, in this study of toddlers, mm-hmm. they did in language development. In this case, they had the families tape record their meals, and then they went through the recordings and wrote down all the new words that the children were saying night after night after night, and they could see how children built their vocabulary.
Mm. So also what's happening during the day then is reinforced.
Yes.
At the table.
Yes.
Very interesting. When you were working on this book, The Surprising Power of Family Meals, and you told people, well, I'm working on this book, and it's about family meals, how did they react? What kind of stories did you hear?
They all had to tell me in enormous detail about the meals of their childhood. Some would tell me about the meals that they have now with their families. Usually it was with great pleasure. They would usually say to me, oh, that's so important. We always do that in my family, or we do it as often as we can, or I wish we could do it more, and it's been so important to my family. Or let me tell you about when I was growing up, my mother always did this, or my sister always did this, or this is how we always had our meal. Sometimes people would say, oh, you're doing that. Well, you know, I didn't have such good experiences. Mm-hmm. When they would tell me more about them, that would usually be about a parent exerting an undue amount of control over the situation. But for the most part, the stories that I heard were how important these events were. And we're not talking holidays. We're not talking special events. We're talking just the plain, ordinary, everyday mealtimes that sort of slide by without thinking about them.
Yeah. Now, people who had good experiences growing up, are they more likely to continue to want to have family meals?
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
And those people who had bad experiences, they don't want to push it too much? Or?
Yeah. And then when you talk to people who work with people with eating disorders, very often you'll hear something like that. That family meals at home were very contentious, very difficult, and so one obvious response is to just get away from the table as fast as you can, stop eating.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good reason that my mother turned the television. Because my dad would come home from work and he would have to go back to work. He worked the second shift and he had all kinds of issues going. Mm-hmm. And he would, there was a time where we did everything wrong. Mm-hmm. He was so unhappy with us. And by turning the television on, he piped down.
Yeah.
So
sounds like a reasonable solution.
Yeah. But what I remember about family mealtime growing up, the good times were Sunday brunch after church and Sunday dinner.
Mm-hmm. Maybe everybody
really,
was just more relaxed.
Yeah. Sunday was a great day, and sometimes we'd go for a drive or we'd go for a family, to the park or do something together that way. And, look at the funny papers, and it was much more relaxed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that one of the reasons why lots of people are encouraging family meals now is that so many of the other family institutions have gone by the wayside, and so many other community institutions have been weakened in the last generation or so. We've given up so many supports that this is one that people mostly remember and can produce. It's not only that this is a very, very useful institution, it's that so many other family institutions are no longer available.
Hmm. What happens when there's a change within a family? Divorce, for example.
Family meals can be a really wonderful way to help ease transitions, because transitions like divorce, like death, moving even, or changes in family structure can be very difficult. And again, the comfort of routine can't be overestimated. It's also a way to enact the new family. Family meals are rituals. Rituals are habits that have meaning. And they help us see in a very visual way, in a very real way, what the new family is, and so we can begin to move forward. It can be helpful to shift the seating arrangement so there's not an empty chair. It can be very helpful to, if there's been a change in the family structure, shift the contents of the meal slightly, shift the menu, find out, for instance, in a blended family,
mm-hmm.
that can be a difficult situation. But you can use that to your advantage by giving people turns to have their favorite meal. You can agree on, maybe you won't always agree, but have some time where you can have sharing what is going to be the new family.
What about working together to put the meal on the table?
That's great. That's great. I can't recommend that enough. And you can start with babies, which may sound ridiculous, but I've done it. You can fill up your kitchen sink with water or maybe soapy water, get some plastic utensils, tell your toddler that you need their help. You need their help washing the dishes, and they will sit there very happily for a long period of time washing the dishes. Now, you are going to wash the dishes after they've finished washing the dishes. But they, in the meantime, they've kept quiet for a while. They've been busy, and they think that they're helping, and they are helping. You can have little kids carry things to the table or carry them back. If they're old enough to count, they can count out the number of spoons that are needed. As kids get older, they take on more skills. And cooking is wonderful. For some reason, we've gotten into this, we're going down a road with cooking where we think that on the one hand, it has to be gourmet or else it's drudgery. Well, it's neither of those things. Cooking is a fun activity, and when you're finished with it, you have a real product. So it's a great thing for kids to do. And the more kids help with the shopping and the cooking, the less fussy they will be. because they have a stake in it. They're going to, if they've made it, they're going to eat it.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting that we're watching cooking as entertainment?
Yes.
And reading cookbooks for entertainment.
Yes.
And
not cooking.
And not cooking. But, you know, I don't, spaghetti is just such an easy, good thing. And how can you go wrong? Who doesn't like it? But to say to you that not only are we're a little maybe anxious about what we're putting on the table, it's not good enough? Or does our interest in cooking, watching it, and being, you know, sitting in front of the television set and watching someone cook and having all these beautiful magazines and cookbooks, does it say we're hungry for for a meal together, a meal, you know, fixed with some care?
Yes, yes. To me, it's about being a spectator society, when in fact we get much more pleasure out of being part of something, of producing something and cooperating and producing something together.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Miriam Weinstein. She's here visiting the University of Illinois. She's visiting the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program here at the University of Illinois. She gave a lecture last night. She's here this afternoon with us on the Afternoon Magazine. My name's Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with questions, comments, your thoughts on family mealtime. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Join us here at our table. What do religious traditions have to tell us about?
Oh, I would guess that there is not a religious tradition that does not involve
breaking bread
or eating rice or whatever the staple food is. And eating together is so basic for probably every human society and has been for most of human history. It's also a wonderful way to stay in touch with your religious tradition, your religious background, mm-hmm. pass that along. Food has a wonderful symbolic quality. Just the fact of ingesting food, taking something from outside of us and making it part of us, obviously very important in the Christian religion. In the Jewish tradition, the Passover Seder is a meal. Seder means order. It's a meal which is meant to teach children the story of Passover. Food is wonderfully evocative. Smells and tastes stay in our memory very strongly.
Yeah, and in every tradition, it seems to me, or many, fasting and then eating are important traditions.
Right. Fasting as the opposite of eating.
Right. To pay attention to other things but then to come to the table and break
the fast.
The fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller calling in from Danville, line one. Hi.
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 I have just a comment to make about some of the things that can be learned from just some commonplace conversations that, as Dad tells about something that happened at work that day, or Mom, or even the children at school, that as they tell about it and tell about how it was handled and what was done that was maybe good, not good, I think there's some coping skills that are sort of just absorbed. And I think just some very basic values about how something should be done and what we stand for and that kind of thing. It seems to me that those are just some sort of very subtle things that are handed on at that time, too. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful point because just the fact of reacting, as you said, to what happened over the course of the day very strongly passes on who we are as a family. And if it solidifies our values, and if we are skipping those opportunities in favor of bringing a sandwich to the athletic practice or having the kids individually walk through the kitchen and picking up something to eat and then eating in their rooms, we are giving up a really basic opportunity to strengthen who we are.
Hmm. In the book, you write about some years ago now, going to France and spending some time in Paris. And I want you to tell us a little bit about your experience there with French families and their evenings. And then the question I have is that changing? Are the Europeans, are the Asians, are we all in this globalized mess?
Well, I was very lucky when I was a young adult just after college to go and spend some time with a family in Paris. And I was totally awed by the relaxation and the way that they produced these absolutely exquisite meals with seemingly no effort whatsoever. The lady of the house, who had a very serious job, might I add, but whose job was finished at 5 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock she left work, and on the way home she stopped at the marketplace and picked up fresh food, and then came home, and several family members helped with the cooking. And it was assumed that the evening's activity would be the cooking and the eating. And it was, and it was always a rather simple but wonderful meal with fresh ingredients. And the kids were expected to sit at the table, were expected to at least listen to the conversation, and were not expected to run around from one extracurricular activity to another. But it was expected that being part of a group was something that was worth learning, being able to take part in a conversation. And, of course, the food was fantastic. To some extent, everybody in the world is experiencing the same sort of speed-up. Same sort of pressures, yes. But there have been studies that show there's a psychology professor at University of Pennsylvania, who does a lot of studies of comparing eating in the United States and Paris. And I'm assuming he just likes spending a lot of time in Paris. So he studies like the McDonald's in the U.S. and the McDonald's in Paris, and finds that portions are smaller in France, and people will spend 2 to 3 times longer eating in the McDonald's in Paris.
Really?
Yes.
Well, nice work if you can, get it. The responsibility of bringing the meal to the table has traditionally been, it's been the role of women. Is that, do you see that changing? I'm lucky enough to be married to somebody who likes to cook, and mealtime is the evening meal is very important to us. We prepare it together, and although I'm just around the edges in terms of preparation, but in terms of sharing the tasks and that kind of thing, is this also something that maybe we need to think about? If women are still carrying the responsibility for this, does that make it more difficult?
There certainly has been a shift because, when I was growing up, let's say in the 50s, you would never have seen any man set foot in the kitchen. So that's certainly shifted. But it hasn't shifted very far in terms of responsibility. Women are still feeling primarily responsible. And Reed Larson, who is based right here at the University of Illinois, has done some really interesting studies about just that topic. Women's emotional state goes down when they come home. Whereas men still tend to come home, turn on the TV, and their emotional state is better when they come home from work. Whereas women at the end of the workday feel the responsibility of getting the meal on the table, mm-hmm. and feeling very pressured at that time.
Round 2.
Yeah.
Ding.
Yeah.
Let's take another call, a listener in DeKalb, line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You know what? I was going to say, I've had chances. I've been fortunate to go back and forth to Europe a few times, and I love it over there. The one thing I find is extremely, or that's lacking or missing, is the lack of additives and I want to say, crap that they put into preserving the food here over there. And I think that's another thing that people don't tend to forget that, you know, if you go into McDonald's over there, I think a lot of those, it's fresh food. They just don't have the capability that we do to go through and do all the processing that we do. I was just wondering if you had, you know, experiences in that. And real quick note, I'm a guy, of course, and I love cooking, but the problem is I got two left hands. And how the heck I watch these guys on some of these shows, Emerald, do all that fast.
I don't even know how women do it. I'm trying to get
that way. You know, my wife tries to teach, but I get impatient with the knife because I can't do that chopping that fast, you know.
Well,
that's
of course
you'll never be a cook in a restaurant.
That's right, but you're not going to be a cook in the restaurant. You're going to be a good home cook. You just find one or two things that you like to make and learn how to make them and enjoy making them. And then once you can do those, you move on to something else. You're not going to be Emerald. The goal should not be. The goal should be to make something that you can enjoy.
We're home cooks.
Yeah. I think that's one of the problems with seeing all these people on TV. It's just too intimidating. But I can say something about the additives, which are a little unnerving. I was just told recently about a person who was who was in charge of poisoning rats in different situations, and so they had to find food that the rats liked so that they could put the poison in the food that the rats liked. And since rats eat human garbage, you have to find human foods that taste like... Mm-hmm. Anyway, in the United States, they couldn't get rat poison that the rats were happy eating until they put some plastic in the food. And then rats liked the taste of it. So our food has enough additives now that it's even filtered down to the rats.
Mm-hmm. I love it, though. I love this whole section because I've got vertigo. I don't know if you've got this vertigo, this type that there's no cure for. So that makes, you know, makes the room spin and all that. But that, and plus I just hit 50, and I'm looking at, and I've been looking at this for a while, though, that the older you get, the more stuff you have to you look out for what you're eating. And I'll tell you what, I'm solely a product because of the previous jobs I had. Go to a McDonald's or go to a place, and I tried not to eat the hamburgers. I tried to eat something with some protein or something in it. I guarantee you that it didn't work. So I've got myself on a regiment where I'm actually watching my health. But I'm seeing this in a lot of people now, especially the younger generation. They eat more because I didn't have access to it. I mean, I'm 15. There wasn't that many McDonald's around. There wasn't that garbage food. I always ate a home-cooked meal or something, or I made my own sandwich. And I'm watching kids just go and eat whenever they want. I don't know what you're going to do. And I used to think that America wasn't going to be fat. Well, you know, as long as we have the freedom to do what we want, I think we're in trouble. And thanks. I'll get off. You guys have a good weekend.
You too.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. There are, you know, there's drive-through after drive-through after drive-through.
Yes.
They're all right in a row, so you can make your choice. You can drive the family through three of them, and everybody's happy right in the car. And it's really not such a great idea in the long run, is it?
No, you really, I mean, quite aside from the quality of the food, you're giving up an opportunity to sit and be together. Eating in the car is pretty grim,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Why have a family?
Why have a family?
There we've got to leave it. Miriam, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon for the program.
Thank you.
Miriam Weinstein is the author of The Surprising Power of Family Meals, How Eating Together Makes Us Smarter, Stronger, Healthier, and Happier. The book is published by the Steerforth Press. Miriam, again, thank you.
Thanks.